From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Bering Sea crab opens on the 15th. Alaska fishermen get a break on China tariffs as some products drop from the list. Got a question for gubernatorial candidates? We tell you how to submit them for possible use in the gubernatorial fisheries debate. And finally, just what exactly does the ocean floor look like? All that and more coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
Crabbing in the Bering Sea starts this coming week. The Bristol Bay Red King crab, Bering Sea snow crab, and Bering Sea tanner crab fisheries open on the 15th. News about population health is mixed. While snow crab stocks are on the rise, king crab and tanner crab are declining. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
The quota for Bristol Bay Red King crab is way down. The total allowable catch is 4.3 million pounds. That's 2 million pounds less than last year, which was already the lowest TAC since 1996. Miranda Westfall is the area management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She said she expected the spring survey to show a decline in Red King crab, but the drop was even greater than anticipated.
It's hard to determine exactly what the trigger, what the combination of triggers is for the declines in this stock. We believe it's probably a combination of environmental factors along with maybe something has changed, there's bycatch issues. It's hard to tell exactly what the threshold is because we can't go out and see them and count them and look at their environment since they're at the bottom of Bristol Bay.
That's a theme of our conversation. It's hard for scientists to design studies that pinpoint specific causes of crab population decline, but they can point to unusual features of the Bering Sea right now that could be stressors. Warm water, for example.
Right now, we know that the Bering Sea has been very warm for a couple years. This year, it's going to be another warm year. The environmental scientists that study Bering Sea temperatures, they're letting us know that there's not a cold pool this year. So generally, there's a cold pool that comes down through the Bering Sea and helps to structure the different populations that we have of crab and groundfish. That's not there this year. It's possible the crab could have moved, or they can't adapt to environmental stressors. It's hard to say.
The Bering Sea tanner crab is another population that's struggling. 3 years ago, the fishery did not open due to low population. Last year, the fishery's west side opened, while the east side remained closed. This year, the same will happen, with a similar quota, 2.4 million pounds for the west side only.
We're seeing a lot of old shell crab, a lot of older crab, not a lot of new shell biomass in the system right now. But there is a pulse of small, really small juveniles that'll be coming into the fishery in about 5 years. So we've got some hope coming, but right now it's sort of an aging population we're still fishing on, which is obviously declining as we fish on them.
The bright spot is the Bering Sea snow crab. Their quota of 27.5 million pounds is way up from last year.
We've got a large recruitment pulse that's just starting to come into the fishery, which is great. So we're expecting really good news for the next few years.
All three Bering Sea crab fisheries open October 15th. Bristol Bay Red King crab will remain open until January 15th. Bering Sea snow crab runs through May. Bering Sea tanner crab goes until the end of March. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. MC@AMSEA.org or 907-747-3287.
Finally, some good news about the tariffs. Some of Alaska's seafood industry has escaped the Trump administration's trade war with China for now. KBBI's Aaron Bolton reports that the industry is happy that the administration dropped some mainstay seafood products from a list of tariffs it imposed last week. He has more from Homer.
The Trump administration levied billions of dollars worth of tariffs on the world's second largest economy last week. The tariffs start at 10% and will ratchet up to 25% by 2019. The Trump administration's original list of levies included seafood products that Alaska processors export to China for reprocessing. McDowell Group fisheries economist Garrett Everidge.
Portion of that actually comes back to the U.S. So these would be products such as salmon products, Pacific cod, and other seafood products that the state produces.
But Pacific cod and salmon have been dropped from that list.
And as of right now, those categories have been excluded from the import tariffs. Pollock products have also been excluded.
That's good news, because even when those tariffs were just a proposal, they were slowing down Alaska processor sales in China, the main buyer of Alaska seafood. That's because Chinese buyers were taking a wait-and-see approach.
Compared to a few months ago when there was a bit more uncertainty and just less information, we now have a better understanding of those products that are actually going to be on the list, and that represents an improvement for both the buyers and the sellers.
Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute Executive Director Alexa Tonkovich agrees the final list is an improvement. However, she says other countries that send their salmon, cod, and pollock harvests to China will be able to better compete with those same products originating in Alaska because they're commingled upon export.
Some of that product that will now not be tariffed is product of our competitors, so it's not a straight win, but generally we're pleased with the modification and the removal of certain product codes of Alaska seafood off the list. Certainly salmon is a big win, having that off the list.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan also praised the move in a press release Thursday. Overall, the removal of salmon and other products gives the Alaska seafood industry some breathing room in a trade dispute that only shows signs of heating up. Tonkovich says that's something the industry is concerned about.
China, every time we put a tariff on their product, they counter us. So, you know, we're continuing to monitor to see what additional tariffs may come down the line. We would like to see a more definitive resolution to this conflict soon.
China has kept its relationship with the Alaska seafood industry in mind during the dispute. It exempted seafood entering the country for reprocessing when it implemented a 25% tariff on U.S. seafood earlier this year. The state harvests 60% of all seafood in the U.S., which accounts for a significant portion of products that are exported to China. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Next month, Alaskans go to the polls and vote for, among others, a governor. Before voting, many fishermen want to know how responsive the candidate is to fishing issues and fishermen. Is there a particular coastal issue that concerns you? If you could ask the candidates one question, what would it be? That's not a rhetorical question, as the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce is soliciting public questions for the upcoming gubernatorial fisheries debate, which will be held in Kodiak on Monday evening, October 22nd. The traditional event is met with interest by both the candidates and fishermen, as well as those in coastal Alaska. To submit a question or get more information about the debate, you can contact the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce. Come on, admit it, you've always wondered, what does the bottom of the ocean actually look like? A global collaboration of public and private groups are working to figure that out. The goal is to completely map the seafloor by the year 2030. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, Rasha McChesney has more from two Alaska companies who are pitching in on that effort.
The Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation is spearheading a project that could lead to the state getting a pipeline from Prudhoe Bay down to Nikiski in Cook Inlet. There, liquefied natural gas would be loaded onto tankers and then shipped to Asia. But before they could decide if it was feasible to do that, project managers needed to know what the bottom of the inlet looked like. Cook Inlet has extreme tides, giant boulders, and moving sand waves that could potentially bury the pipeline. So they hired a geoservice company to chart it out for them. And it turns out that Fugro, that's the company they hired, is part of a massive effort to completely map the seafloor by 2030. Fugro Alaska General Manager Radha Hajinova told me about it at a recent conference in Juneau.
Surprisingly, the world's oceans are not mapped. They just look like they are, but it's just a visual trick.
Yeah, wait, I use that Google Earth thing all the time where I'm scrolling through to see what something is. Are you telling me those maps are a lie?
Those are just fillers. That's what we think it is. It's not based on any sounding or any measurement.
Fugro is partnering with this Seabed 2030 effort to replace those filler charts with real data. To do that, they're doing new mapping expeditions and helping to convince governments, private companies, and other sources of seafloor data to make it public, including the state's Gasline Corporation.
And, we thought about it for a bit, and we said, yeah.
That's Fritz Krusen. He's a VP at the Gasline Corporation.
This sounds like something good for the public, for the Cook Inlet fishermen and for the marine traffic that goes up and down to Anchorage through the Cook Inlet.
Krusen says the state corporation has to clear the request with BP, ConocoPhillips, and ExxonMobil first. They're the ones who own the original data. But he expects the data to be released in a few weeks. They're not the first company in Alaska to pay for marine charting data, then turn it over to the public. In late 2017, the broadband company Quintillion finished installing more than 1,000 miles of cable along Alaska's Arctic coast, bringing internet to communities from Prudhoe Bay to Nome. And just like the state's Gasline project, the company needed to know what was happening under the water before it could install the fiber optic cable. Christina Woolston is the company's VP of External Relations. And she says when the company started its project, there just wasn't a lot of information available about the seabed floor in the area.
We had a blank map to start from, and we surveyed the seabed floor along about 1,000 miles along the coast of Alaska.
Because this is the first time this type of work has been done in the area, Woolston says it adds data that could be used to build functional charts for everyone from fishing boat captains to new private industry in the Arctic. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Avery Lill at KDLG in Dillingham, Aaron Bolton at KBBI in Homer, Rasha McChesney with the Alaska Energy Desk in Juneau, and from Lainey Welch at Alaska Fish Radio. A big thank you to everyone who makes this program possible each week, and big thanks to you, our listeners, for taking time to listen. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.